what they don't know. It's where I've been and who I am, all the ways I've grown.
This isn't self-help, it's a full-on rebirth. Welcome to Girl Wake Up, the podcast for women who are done playing small, staying silent, or living by rules they never wrote. I'm Amy Polacco, journalist, divorce and life coach, and freedom warrior, and I'm here to help you take your power back. Because the system isn't going to save us. We need to save ourselves. So grab your coffee, your courage, and maybe a few curse words. It's time to wake up. The Dirty John story began in 2017 with the Los Angeles Times hit podcast Dirty John, which exposed John Meehan as a serial con man who used charm and intimacy to manipulate women. The investigation later became a scripted series on Bravo in 2018, starring Connie Britton, and later streamed on Netflix, turning the story into a cultural phenomenon. More recently, the First Wife podcast has reframed the story through the voices of the women harmed by Meehan, including our guest, Tanya Bales, shifting the focus from spectacle to survival. Welcome, everybody, to Girl Wake Up. Today's episode is about what happens when the red flags don't show up all at once, but one by one. You may know the story of Dirty John, right? Maybe you've watched the show or listened to some podcasts, but today we're hearing from the woman who lived it and lived to outsmart it. I'm so excited that Tanya Bales is here. She's the first wife of John Meehan and the author of the powerful new book out right now, When You See It, How I Outsmarted and Outlasted Dirty John. And ladies, this isn't just a story about surviving a con man. It's about intuition, manipulation, coercive control, and what it really takes to break free. These predators aren't just scary, but they derail your life. Ask me how I know, right? They cost you precious time, causing financial devastation and affecting your mental and physical health, which I'm sure Tanya is going to talk about. We're so honored to have you here to share your story. Welcome to Girl Wake Up, Tanya.
Well, thank you, Amy. I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me on your program.
Well, you know, your book is called When You See It. You know, I'm curious, what was the moment when you feel like you truly saw your situation for what it was? And what made that moment different from other red flags that so many of us have lived through, right?
Yeah, so there's so much here. There's so many red flags, but you know, I say, don't be too judgy. It was 1988 when I met John. So, red flags weren't talked about, you know, back then,
but
I can fast forward you to, I think I describe in the book that some of the, instincts or gut feelings that I had all began to bubble up. At one time when things were really starting to reveal themselves with John. And it really wasn't until I made a very scary phone call to his mom, mm-hmm. someone who I'd never met and never talked to, that I realized, oh my God, you know, I'm in big trouble. And I have married someone that I literally know nothing about, who has a hidden past and a hidden present, honestly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, terrible, just terrible.
And this could happen to anybody, right, Tanya? Because, you know, I'm a divorce coach. I'm coaching women all the time and they say, I'm so stupid. How did I not see this? And I validate for them. You didn't do anything wrong, right? You thought that other person was honest and a good person, just like you are. Don't you think that's the case?
Right. Yeah. Because I think you see life through your own eyes. And if you're an honest person, you don't believe or see that other people can look you right in the face and be lying to you about who they are, what their birthday is, who their family is. You just, it's not on your radar because you're an honest person. So it can happen to anybody. Love is blind. I mean, once those hormones start flowing, you really honestly can't see straight.
Right. And don't you think that our society conditions people? You know, I always feel like I'm picking on Disney here, but we grew up watching these movies where when they're over the top and things happen quickly, That's how it's supposed to be. So we second guess ourselves. And like you said, there were probably like a million little cuts before you finally had the last straw, right? And we doubt our own intuition because they're telling us we're crazy. They're telling us our intuition is off, right?
Yes, and as something you just mentioned, I specifically remember being a young woman in my 20s thinking, I didn't have a lot of confidence as a young woman. I didn't think I was pretty. I actually had a nose job because I felt unattractive. And really, I met John soon after that. But I remember thinking, how exciting, a man is going to notice me. And this will turn into, a lasting relationship. Marriage was very important to me because I grew up Catholic. It's a sacrament. I took it very seriously, and I was looking forward to that. I wasn't desperate. I knew that it would happen, on its time. And unfortunately, I think John targeted me as someone with a personality that he could, manipulate very easily. I was a nurse. We
You
tend to
cared
be
about other
very,
people?
that's right. We're very giving. We're very empathic. We're very all the things that nurses are. And so I was a perfect target for John.
Right. And I think in those first dates, they're amassing information, right? I look back, right? In my situations, I wanted the Norman Rockwell family always the same thing. They go after people who really value marriage and are going to stick in it even when things happen. We don't throw in the towel easily, right? We're going to work on it. We're committed to those vows, and they actually exploit that.
Yes, you hit it right on the head. That's exactly what happened. Okay, I lost my train of thought. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I forgot to mention earlier that you did this amazing podcast called The First Wife with a good friend of mine, Aliza Rosen. So it's such a small world. She's one of my dearest, oldest friends. And, many people may have seen the original, Dirty John docuseries, right? But they didn't know your story. And so there's so much there. And I encourage everybody to read this book because you can learn so much. And also, these predators have different lives, different places. They want to keep all their victims from talking to each other, right? But once you start talking, you start fitting the pieces of the puzzle together, right?
Yes, yeah. So in that podcast with Lisa, I mean, it is really kind of like a reinvestigation. And we reached out to multiple people that had not been talked to by me or the original Dirty John podcast. And it was so revealing. I learned so much. It was so hard learning a lot of the things I had to relive times in my life that were quite honestly devastating, but it also leads to healing. Knowledge is power, and it helped explain and validate what I'd gone through.
And you are paying it forward. I mean, reaching back and helping so many women who hear your story and are in these confusing relationships. And we'll never know how many people you're saving, Tanya, with everything you're doing, and Laura Richards, of course, the well-known criminologist, weighed in on that one. I think that some people think, oh, I would never fall for someone like Dirty John. What do they misunderstand about how manipulation actually works?
Well, I think people can be judgy, and I think they have a vantage point that the person in the situation doesn't have. The behavior of this type of person is very nuanced, it's very slow, it's very calculated. It's not all this, red flags, being waved at you, all at one time. They know what they're doing. They're spending all day thinking about how to manipulate you, how to control you, how to get over on you. And you're just being a normal person, just living your normal life. And so they have all of the advantage points and all of the power in that situation and relationship.
I hear so often from coaching clients, Tanya, and I remember thinking the same thing myself. that I just couldn't wrap my head around the fact that another human being could be so devious, right? So evil, perhaps. And I imagine that played a role in your situation, right? Like there's that cognitive dissonance, like, no, he couldn't possibly do that. But it just kept escalating and escalating, especially with his drug use as well, right?
Yeah, so I mean, I didn't even, drug use was not on my radar until I talked to his mom, searched his office. I honestly was thinking, I think he must be having an affair. And I went down into his office and I searched, really looking for anything. And I found evidence that he was meeting a woman, because there was directions to a hotel. And then I found the drug box, which him using drugs was not on my radar. And, you know, I give drugs. I'm a nurse anesthetist. I administer drugs all the time. And he was stealing the drugs that I used every day as part of my practice. But I mean, that's part of the problem is recognizing the behaviors of a drug addict. But I really wasn't educated on that from a personal standpoint. So finding those drugs, I was like, are these for him? Are these, you know, his mom told me that he was mailing drugs to his brother. Are they for the brother? Is he, you know, just accidentally brought these home? And I thought, that's ridiculous. I'm a nurse anesthetist too. I've never accidentally brought home handfuls of narcotics, but there is just something, I don't know, seeing is believing. And I think, and I wasn't sure. I wasn't willing to accuse him of something so serious without knowing for sure. And so I just set out to, you know, learn everything I could, document everything I could, watch the narcotic box to see if drugs were coming or going. I just really had to become my own personal detective and advocate. Because even
And
at, you know, even after I'm sorry, even after I reported him, it wasn't really taken as seriously as I thought. And of course, they had to suspect me too. Like they had to suspect that maybe I'm just upset that my husband's had an affair and now I'm going to set him up by, you know, planting drugs in the home. So my profession was at risk. And of course, John said the drugs were mine. So it was a mess,
I want
absolute
to talk
mess.
about that, Tanya, because one of the most poignant things in your book is how you went to several authorities for help and they didn't believe you. Can you talk about that a little bit? You kept saying there was something off.
Yeah. So I don't want to say that they didn't believe me. I think they were just also trying. You know, I lived in a very upscale neighborhood. I think it just didn't match for them. And I think they had to do their due diligence to some extent,
Got it.
because I could have set him up. It is a possibility. So I think they had to, you know, to figure it all out and do an investigation. It really was once I went to the DEA, and I sat with two men in a small room, told them the whole story, told them that I found out that he's living under he's changed his name, he's changed his birth date, blah, blah, blah. And they literally, one guy in the corner felt like he was bored with my story and he was closing his eyes. And the other guy's like, well, this could be construed as you being, you know, just, an angry wife who's been cheated on. I mean, he said it. And I said, but that's not the case. That's not what's happening. And so that is an instance where I just really felt diminished and, not really believed. And then I just kept waiting. They said they're going to be watching him. They're going to watch him. Something's going to happen. And it went 4 months and more than a year that John was still practicing as a nurse anesthetist. And I'm like, is anybody doing anything? And then unbeknownst to me, there is a joke that DEA means don't enforce anything. So, maybe it's a common problem. I don't know. I'm sure they don't have all the time and money in the world to investigate everything, but yeah.
Well, you know, Tanya, that I co-authored this book with Dr. Christine Cocciola, who you know, and we talk a lot about how the tables are turned and women are portrayed as out for revenge. I wrote an article for Ms. Magazine about that a while back, right? That we're often seen as the scorned lover, and they're manipulative and all these things. And I think your case is an example of that, like you said, that bubbled to the surface a little bit. And they said the quiet part out loud a little bit. I mean, I don't want to give everything away in your book because I want people to read your book because it's incredible. But you also unearthed all these relationships he was having at the same time he was with you. I mean, that must have been devastating. And I think for so many women, don't you think, Tanya, you have this gut feeling something's off, but you can't prove it. And if you do confront them, they gaslight, they tell you you're too sensitive, they tell you, I love you. They might even start in a whole nother round of love bombing. So, how did that happen for you?
Yeah, so one particular incident, I mean, it's the first chapter of my book. I receive a phone call from a woman who is actually looking for John because she doesn't know he's married. I answer the phone. She says, "Is this his sister?" And I said, "No, this is his wife." And she starts stuttering, backpedaling. And finally, I convinced her to tell me. She exposes that, I think you're married to a con artist. He told us that this BMW is his, and that, and she said, "I slept with him last night," and on and on and on. So, fast forward, we work through that because John, tells me that it's not true. He tells me that he made some unflattering remarks to some girls at school. He was in nursing school at the time, and they're out for revenge on him. And that's why this woman has called. I don't have any proof that he's telling the truth or she's telling the truth. But he used that against me, fast forward many years later, when he wants to go ahead and divorce. He said, "You're never going to believe me that I didn't sleep with that woman and that I was crazy, and that's why he was leaving. You're never going to believe me." And I think deep down, even though I did stay, he convinced me to stay. He convinced me that it wasn't true. Deep down, I was worried that it was true, but I had no way to prove it.
I was going to
So.
ask you about that. Did your body, Tanya, in any way kind of show you? There's that gut feeling. And lately, I've been talking to so many divorce coaching clients who are literally getting physically ill, right? Because they're living in this situation that is not healthy at all. What were you going through during that time?
During the time of the phone call or during the time of the divorce? Because those are years apart. I mean,
No, the phone call and
okay.
leading up to it, where you felt something was off and
Yeah, so with that phone call, I think initially I knew it was right. I knew she was telling me the truth. This woman even gave me her phone number, and I wrote it down on a little piece of paper and hid it in one of my anesthesia books. And I immediately, this is 1993. We had phone books. I opened the phone book to divorce attorneys. I mean, my initial reaction was, this is true and I've got to get out of this. But when I confronted John about it, he left the house for a little while. I think that gave him time to come up with something, honestly. And he came back and then he started a pity party about that he needed to tell me some things. He wanted me to sit down. He told me that he was sexually abused by his brother and his brother's friend when he was young. And he turned the whole thing around to, now I'm not even thinking about this woman. I'm thinking about my poor husband who's revealing this horrific thing that's happened to him. And that was a tactic of his. And maybe some of that is true. Maybe it's totally made up. I don't know. But then I'm feeling sorry for him,
Right, because we're empaths and they're
That's right.
adept at doing this, right?
That's
When
right.
you look back, Tanya, for so many of us, right? Hindsight's 2020. We can see the red flags now.
That's
When you
right.
look back to the courtship and when you met him, because I really want to educate women so that any of you out there dating, any of you in marriages, any of you post-divorce out there meeting people, what do you see now in that courtship? Take us through it a little bit.
So the night I met him, I was just out with friends after work. I wasn't looking, I've never been picked up before. I wasn't looking to be picked up. I was just having fun with friends, and there was male and female friends. And I went to the restroom, and John and his friend were standing there. And Now I know they were stopping women and saying, "Hey, where do you work or what do you do for a living?" As a way to, as a pickup line, I guess. Maybe they were looking for nurses. Maybe they were looking for, girls they could get over on. I think they were. And I stopped and I was a very polite girl. I wasn't like, I'm going to the bathroom. I stopped and I talked to him. And then I went to the bathroom and I came back. He stopped me again. And then, we had some things in common. He was working in a cath lab and he wanted to get me a drink, which they were free. That wasn't too hard. But he pulled out his driver's license and I snatched it for some reason. I'd never done that before in my life. Maybe I was already having feelings. I don't know. But I'm like, oh, I thought you said you were whatever age we were at the time, 24. And the age on his driver's license said he was like 5 years older than that. And he said, oh, Tanya, he said, I changed my license years ago so I could get, alcohol in college. And back in those days, the driver's license were laminated, so you could change your
Yeah, I
age on your driver's
remember.
license. So I totally, blew that off as a plausible explanation, So I think I lost track of what your question was.
When you met him, in retrospect, do you look back and say,
Oh,
oh,
the
that was a
courting.
red flag, that was a red flag, now that we're more
So,
educated?
yeah. So, Amy, he that night, as I understand now, not then, that he started pushing boundaries to see if I would drop my boundaries. So his friend wanted to leave and he didn't want to leave. He was enjoying my company, And he said, will you give me a ride home? Because, Jeff wants to go home. And I said, no. And he eventually was able to, through flattery and all the things, convince me to give him a ride home. And my intention, Amy, was to, he lived the opposite direction of me. I really didn't want to drive him home. I had worked, I was tired, I wanted to go home and go to bed. I drove him home. My intention was, thanks for the dance. See ya, wouldn't want to be ya. And then we get outside of his door, and now he's, he wants to show me renovations he's done in his home. Somehow he convinced me to go inside. Okay, I'm going to go inside, and in 2 minutes I'm going to turn around and come back. And then he tosses me a basketball, and then we're in a Nerf basketball game, and then there's touching, and then there's kissing, and then something I've never done in my life. I stayed all night, and I slept with him, and then such regret in the morning. But all of those things were
Right. He
boundaries
was
that he was
testing you.
able to push. Yeah. Well, and I failed miserably.
Well, hey, we all can look back, Tanya, right? In a relationship I was in, same thing, a story about a transgression in youth, but then you make excuses for them and they seem like they're opening up to you. They're doing all of these things to break down those boundaries, like you said, and convince us that this is like a soulmate type relationship, right? Like when you know, you do stay over the first night, right? When you're destined to be together and it's not a terrible thing to do. So I think that's what they're doing all the time, right?
Yeah. And I was somebody that I rejecting someone else felt so uncomfortable to me. It's not something I had done, and I just it was easier for me to, I guess, cave than to be in that moment of rejecting him and feeling sorry for him for the rejection. To me, that it's crazy now. But and then John gave me his phone number, and I left in the morning, and I thought, okay, I'm not going to call him. This was a mistake. But he knew where I worked because that's one of his first questions. So he had me paged at work the next day. And then he was full of, I really enjoyed your company. I think we have a lot in common. I'd love to take you out on a real date, like a reset, start over. And to me, I was like, okay, well, maybe you can start over. Maybe he's right. Maybe, I can erase this because this is going to be somebody that's for me. But we, I just made a mistake. And so then that's how our courtship started.
Right. To fast forward, Tanya, you ultimately do escape from him, and it's a story of triumph, ultimately. How do you feel like you did that, and what lessons would you impart to other women stuck in these relationships?
So what people, a lot of people, don't realize is that John decided to leave me. And therefore I got the strength and the courage to look into all these things that I said in the beginning were bubbling up in me, like something's not right. We just had a baby. This is a planned baby. Why is my husband now suddenly saying he's not happy? And so the courage came with everything I learned about John. The more I learned about him, the more I healed. And like, this was not a marriage that was meant to be. I didn't lose anything because I never had it in the first place. And, the protection of my children gave me the courage to do anything I needed to do. I would have, stood in front of a bullet for my children. I think we all understand that as mothers. I really was in for the fight of my life because even though John wanted to leave me, he still wanted to control me after he left me. And he wanted everything to be his idea. He wanted to bankrupt me. He wanted to ruin my reputation. He wanted to ruin my career, willing to, like I said, he said the drugs were mine. And I was like, oh my God, you a-hole. I put you through anesthesia school so that you could have a wonderful career like me that you said you wanted to have. And now you're going to take my career away. Oh, I was hot. And so I just, even though I was in a lot of danger, I took precautions. And one of those is, I was ashamed to some degree to tell people that I was in this mess. Everybody thought I had a perfect life for a long time. And to admit that I am in trouble and I'm in this mess, but really, I was welcomed with open arms. People told me their stories that they were ashamed to tell, and now they're sharing with me. And so I built a fortress around me of my family, my coworkers, and a good attorney, all the things that I felt protected by then, by being brave enough to tell people the mess I was in.
That's wonderful. And that is an important lesson for all the women listening, right? Is you need a team. You need people behind you who understand it and who get it and are not judging you. And I think one of the reasons that the Dirty John documentary was so successful, right? Or that show was because when people saw Deborah Newell's story, they identified with it. Maybe it didn't have those dramatic, ending, but they could see themselves in what happened with her, right? She was very compassionate, empathetic. He
Forgiving.
was right. He was a moocher ultimately. And I often say to my clients, Tanya, that, this sounds like a gross generalization that there are two kinds of narcissists, but I see a lot who are the very powerful. Maybe they're in finance, make a lot of money. They want to control their wives, right? They, give them an allowance. They can't even get $20 to go to Starbucks or something like that. And then there are the others that see an opportunity and latch on to it. And, he got you to put him through school, right? He got Deborah to support him. They are experts at this.
Yeah, and then the thing with them that is very hard for us normal brain people to understand is because we would think, oh my God, if I tell this lie, this could happen. They don't think like that. They don't have a long plan because they'll just pivot on to the next woman. They don't even care. Hell with you. Tomorrow I'll go try on, with this woman. So that's hard for us to understand because we're always thinking of consequences and reputation, but they don't have any of those things, to worry about. So
That's exactly
they don't care
right.
what they say or what they do.
They treat us or people like little pieces on a chessboard, and they often think they're above the law. They don't even think about the law. They lie to people in authority, and they get away with it a lot of the time. I mean, it caught up with him, thankfully, ultimately, but I think it's a cautionary tale for so many, right, Tanya? How are your children? I know your daughter is part of this project. Do you want to talk a little bit about, how you, as the mama bear, has shepherded them through all of this?
Yeah, so I hope I've been a good example to my daughters of strength and letting them know because I think they felt shame too. And not many children have to go through their father being on Netflix. Right, that's a process. And they were young, and I think that was somewhat embarrassing. But I always let them know that this is not our shame. We didn't do anything wrong. This is his shame. And it's an important story for us to share with other women so that maybe somebody will wake up and see that they're with somebody that they need to get away from. My girls are both doing great. They're both in helping professions. One's a labor and delivery nurse, one's a mental health counselor, which I absolutely love that because my children were in counseling for years. They're not unscathed. I'm sure it has effect on their identity, their relationships, but I feel like we've worked through it the best way that I knew how. I had help, like I said, with a counselor. So there's no book on how to handle this. But I was conscious that I needed to do this right. The things I needed to say to them need to be well thought out. What I said about their father, even though he really is one of the worst people ever, I had to be careful about not saying that to my children because that was going to hurt them.
What would you say to your younger self, Tanya? And what do you say to your daughters about relationships? What would you say to all the women listening? I mean, what are the golden rules and warnings in your mind?
So what I'd say to my younger self is you were fine just the way you were, but someone took advantage of you. I've never wanted to let John have the best parts of me. So I've tried to stay true to who I was, but be a little bit smarter. Listen to your gut, listen to your instincts. It's not rude to listen to those things. I was too polite. I believed him more than I believed myself. And don't let a man or anyone for that matter talk you out of what you know to be true. You are the only person in the room you know is telling the truth. And unfortunately, you have to think about that from time to time.
That is excellent advice. And I just want to move on to the segment we do here on Girl Wake Up, where I, pose a common societal message women hear, right? And we have our guest react to it. And you can tell me whether you think this is truth or trap. Strong women don't end up in controlling relationships.
Baloney.
Exactly.
Not true.
Right. And
I
why do you
hope
think
that
that's
I'm an
not true?
example.
You're right,
I
because
hope
they don't
that.
you think they target strong women? These
Yeah, I think they
predators?
like strong women. I think they like the challenge of a strong woman. I think, easy targets aren't fun for them. This is a game.
And I think in the beginning, we are something they want. We're someone on their arm. They're proud of different things. And then they eventually start kind of chipping away at you. They're more threatened and resentful. So it's a grad. First, you're on the pedestal, then they tear you down, right? So they definitely go for strong women. And I just want to read a letter we got from a listener who knew we were having you on the show and would love for you to weigh in. She says, "Dear Girl Wake Up, I've been dating someone who looks great on paper, charming, attentive, well-liked, but I'm constantly doubting myself. When I bring up concerns, he tells me I'm too sensitive or misunderstanding things. He pushes for closeness faster than I'm comfortable with, talking about the future, living together, even money. And when I slow things down, he says I have trust issues. There's no big red flag, no violence, nothing I can point to, but I feel anxious around him. I'm wondering, am I overreacting, or is this what it looks like when you need to leave before something bad happens? What do you think about this, Tanya?
There are red flags. Your body is telling you, and you're not listening to it. Hey, listen, the feeling of love, there's nothing better. But putting yourself at risk of a miserable life and a miserable relationship, because you don't want to believe yourself or you're not looking at this person more closely is really going to end up, bad for her. All's I can, My advice to her is believe yourself. If he is diminishing the feelings that you're having now, that's not going to get better. That's going to last your relationship. So he should be somebody who would say, "Oh, let me understand why you feel that way," or trying to, trying to understand her feelings rather than just saying, "You're to this or you're to that." There's huge red flags in this relationship for me.
Absolutely, me too. And I think that, a lot of times we bargain with ourselves. We make excuses for them. We don't want to be single, though I do love the trend we're seeing, Tanya, of more women saying, I want to be single, right? I just wrote an article for Newsweek about that, saying, you know what? After I get done with a relationship like this, any unhealthy type of relationship, I'm going to protect my peace. And you start to really be more and more discerning, which is what we would urge that letter writer to do. Because, as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast today, the financial devastation is huge too, right? In addition to the physical and emotional. And some of these guys can derail careers, put you in debt. I've seen women go from living an amazing life to homeless and bankrupt and all of these things. So you've got to protect your own resources as well. This could have detrimental effects for years to come.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Tanya. Is there anything you want to add that I missed or forgot to talk? I mean, I know we could talk forever. I don't want to give too much away because I want people to get this book.
Want me to show you the book?
Yes, show me the book. Oh, I love it. I love the cover. Yes, red and black is a good motif, right?
I promise I didn't copy.
Oh no, I know. No. I think it's great because it evokes that true crime feeling, and it is. I mean, it's a very dramatic story and thought-provoking and moving. So I hope all of you get it there. Where can people find it, Tanya, and where can they connect with you?
So it is available on Amazon, on Barnes and Noble. I guess this is January 13th, right?
Yes.
So it's
It
available
is. It's
today.
available. Yes. When this airs,
And
absolutely.
I mean, people can follow me. I have a Facebook, Tanya Sells Bales, and Instagram, Tanya Bales. And they're welcome to follow that and watch the launch of the book and see where it goes. There's also, and it's been announced, so I can talk about it. Netflix is doing a documentary. They're going to bring this all back up again, but from a new perspective, hopefully more victim focused.
Great.
And all these years later, how everyone's doing, and maybe even some new people that you haven't heard from.
I think that's absolutely wonderful. And thank you for all you do because you're touching so many people's lives. I mean, you could have just faded into the background and you chose to step forward and bring this light and love for other people to the world. So I think I always tell clients who've been through these relationships, may not be Dirty John, but similar, that I don't want you to change who you are. We just have to make you better at spotting them, right? So you're
That's
such
right.
a beautiful
Exactly.
person inside and out, Tanya. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amy. I'm so glad to have been here. And I'm helping others, but in the process, it helps me too. So.
Wonderful. All right. Bye, everybody. Thanks for listening to Girl Wake Up. I'm your host, Amy Polacco. If this episode woke something up in you, don't let it fade. Share it with a friend who needs to hear it, leave a review, and keep this conversation going. Remember, no one's coming to save you, so she did.